This is The Art of Dreaming, and I am still Michael Hemmingson, a.k.a. Worf Poe in the chat room, a.k.a. Doc H. elsewhere, one-time sidekick stand of Angela Black, also known as Mr. Key, from the former A-Team in the afternoons, which may or may not return, I'm not sure. So this evening, with me is J.P. from Journeys with J.P. Are you there, J.P.?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great. Hopefully you can hear me. Tonight I thought we would talk about the Paul McCartney conspiracy hoax or whatever. A couple of months ago I was on JP's show on the afternoons, Tuesday afternoons here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we were talking about the thing for a while, and I thought, you know, it'd be good, you know, since there's so much information, you know, you talk about it for a couple hours, it's still pretty pertinent, I believe, especially if it's true, especially since Paul McCartney or Fall McCartney or Billy Shears or whatever his name is was given a Lifetime Achievement Award by President Obama at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah, right.
So,
well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Where do we start?
Where do we start? So apparently, as the story goes, when Abbey Road came out, some guy called a radio station in, I think it was Detroit, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere
around there. I'm not sure exactly. But I think it was somewhere in the sort of middle part. And see, the thing is, from my point of view, right, I was just a kid. I grew up in the east of London, and I was in a band. I played guitar in a band, and the drummer, we always thought he was a nutter, right? And he said that he had two things that he told us. One was that Paul McCartney was really dead and had been replaced by a double. I think he even said he'd been replaced by a clone, right? And the other one was that Kentucky Fried Chicken was made from rats, especially bred rats. And like neither of them seemed very kind of plausible, you know, at the time. And then later on, and then I grew up, and that was like when I was 15 in the 70s. And a couple of years ago, somebody pointed it out on Facebook. You know, some Facebook friend, random, you know, said, "Oh, Paul McCartney's dead," and it kind of triggered that memory again. I thought, I wonder if there's any reality to it. And it turns out that there is quite a lot of reality to it. I mean, as much as, like, you know, the moon landing pictures have all these weird kind of things about them, that they're all perfect and, you know, like they're taken by a professional photographer in a studio rather than on the moon. But anyway, back to this thing. And so the idea was that in about 1969, this guy rings up a radio station and tells people about Revolution 9. If you play it backwards, it says "Turn Me On, Dead Man," and all this stuff about various clues that Paul McCartney had died and had been replaced by somebody. And it was, you know, suddenly I started thinking about it. And I hit this point of cognitive dissonance. And it was when I just glanced at a picture of the Beatles, right? And there's really classic, iconic pictures of the Beatles, like the Sgt. Pepper cover and things like that. And I'm kind of looking at their faces and I'm thinking, right, that's George, you know, and there's Ringo, and there's John, and who's that? Oh, it's Paul, right? And that tiny thing, oh, who's that? Oh, it's Paul. That's the cognitive dissonance, because first of all, my heart is saying, who's that? I don't recognize this person. He doesn't look familiar. And yet my brain then cuts in with the programming that says, oh, don't be silly. We're always aware that the Fab Four are John, Paul, George and Ringo. So that's by definition got to be Paul. Oh, it's Paul. And so, you know, having deconstructed that tiny moment of non-recognition and then the programming cutting in, that was the moment that I started taking this thing a little more seriously, because I realized that I'd been pulled one, you know, I'd been played a trick on. I'd been misinformed.
Okay.
So that's where that's what kind of revived my interest in the whole thing. So then I started, you know, spending weeks, on end watching these, videos, and I started out finding tiny little clips of 1 or 2 minutes, and I discovered that there was, a couple of films about it. And, basically I can recommend two films, on it. One of them, I actually bought on DVD, but, it's available on YouTube now. And that's called, Paul McCartney Really Is Dead. And that's the, purported last will and testament of George Harrison. In the night he got stabbed, he got his wife to get some, cassettes and a dictaphone, and he dictated this whole story, while he was laying in hospital thinking that he was gonna die the next day, because he'd just been stabbed with a 7-inch knife. And the other one is called The Winged Beetle, which is that's like from an outsider's perspective, looking at all the different clues and bring together some altogether more disturbing view than George's rather kind of, you know, self-centered view. It was very very interesting. Very interesting watching that. I gave that a little watch tonight. So what have you found out?
Well, I heard, excuse me, I heard about this thing way back in the, you know, when I was a teenager too, and, you know, along with the playing Led Zeppelin backwards, and, you know, like playing Stairway to Heaven backwards, and then you have playing Strawberry Fields backwards, or no, it was Number 9, you know, and all of these clues. I don't know, didn't you say, was it George Harrison was stabbed or John Lennon was killed because they were going to reveal the truth?
Both of them.
Oh, both of them were.
Yeah, and therein lies another kind of construction that, you know how it is, you know, you understand how an organization is working, you know how the MO of a particular group of agents, like you've got all these different agencies and they do things their particular way. And that leaves a signature. That there are different. There's this pattern, right? A mind controlled patsy. There's the what's his name? The psychiatrist guy. There's always a psychiatrist guy. Oh yes, he was a paranoid schizophrenic, and he lived it in his own dream world, and you know. I had him every week, and I was programming for this. So, you know, we just triggered him on the telephone, kind of thing. They've wheeled someone like that out, so that, you know, there must be hundreds and thousands of MK sleepers all over the place. That's a scary thought, isn't it? Anyway, meanwhile, the idea that. The penalty for revealing this official secret, right? Okay, so let's go. We have to go back and start from the story, right? And so this story comes from the film, which is called Paul McCartney Really Is Dead, and it's the dramatization of this tape that George Harrison read out, you know, just spoke into. It's a dictaphone, so he told the story his way as far as he could remember, laying in a hospital bed. A couple of the things are a little anachronistic, but, you know, maybe he's been given sedatives, he's a bit old. But the story still sits, the story still works, even though some of the details might be a bit woozy. But the idea was that they were recording in 1966, the last time they performed live was in August 1966. And they weren't seen after that, performing. And, this is the story that they were recording, some album, and, they had an argument, And Paul got really het up about it and left the building. This is Abbey Road in London. It was raining, so he drove his car, and he was driving down the street, and he saw this young woman walking in the rain, and so he thought he'd pick her up, you know, because he was a nice guy. You know, a really nice fellow, you know, a friendly person. And he picks her up, and after a while, driving in a sports car, and she realizes who she's sitting next to. Presumably at that moment, goes crazy and wants to start and hug him and kiss him and do all sorts of stuff. You never know what they might have been up to. You lost your head. Anyway, there's all these clues in the songs, which is interesting as I'll tell the story. Anyway, so she's in the car with him, and he hits a lamppost. The car turns over, bursts into flames. She escapes through the open window, the car explodes, and decapitating McCartney, blowing him to bits. Really, I mean, no two ways about it. It was a really gruesome affair. She then calls the police, finds it's a phone box and calls the police. And I think she must have said a trigger word, because she said, "I think I've killed a Beatle," or something like that. You know, "I've killed Paul McCartney." And somehow MI5 gets involved at that moment. Presumably they were listening. I don't know. Or that they had a contact in Abbey Road Studios, which is more likely, because it's part of EMI, which is the British part of the military industrial complex.
I'm reading something that says she said that when she realized she was with Paul McCartney, she lunged after him, and that's what caused the accident.
Mm-hmm. And so she's basically escaped from this car, calls the police, and MI5 gets involved somehow at this point. And there is a man, the handler, called Maxwell. Maxwell, yeah, songs. But Maxwell goes to get the rest of the Beatles to identify the fellow. Although it's very gruesome, they come across this, rather mutilated body. Bits of him everywhere, really. His jaw had been blown off. And all was left was some teeth sticking out the top of his head. So he looked like a walrus. And that's what Maxwell said. "Oh, he looks just like a walrus there." So, there was a lot of emotion there. And John Lennon goes a bit apeshit at that point. And he's screaming at him, I am the walrus. I am the walrus. So you can hear where these little bits of gruesome details end up in the Beatles music. And if you think about Come Together, here comes old Flat Top, he's been decapitated, right, grooving up slowly, he shoot Coca-Cola, he's blood coming out, he's got juju eyeball, monkey finger, and his head down below his knees, all this stuff going on. It's like this pile of bones. It's their friend mutilated, and after this horrific thing, they're taken to a safe house, and things are hushed up, and the Beatles aren't going to be touring anymore, and they try to find a way around this. And some point they come up with the idea of, how about somebody who looks like one of us? Or it might have been Maxwell suggesting it. But the idea was that Paul McCartney was so loved that the fans, millions of fans, thousands of women would commit suicide, and it would be a big tragedy, and one tragedy created a huge tragedy. And apparently this involved the cabinet, the prime minister and the cabinet at the time, because they were like biggest British exporter, being the Beatles, if at 1966 they had, you know, just dropped out, we wouldn't have had our version of the Summer of Love. It just wouldn't have happened. There wasn't, you know, there wouldn't have been enough joy in the world. Anyway, so, so under the purport of protecting all of these girls, an official secret act was enacted, which created this being that we now know as Paul McCartney, or as we're going to be describing him as Fall, you know. In fact, if you listen very carefully to interviews made with George Harrison, who particularly didn't like him, towards the end, if you look at some of his interviews with the various people, he actually says the word fall and not Paul. He's, you know, he's not got a problem with his fricatives. You know, he's really, absolutely, saying fall. And Fall was the name that they gave to the replacement guy because he was False Paul. And so they ran a lookalike contest. That was the idea, right? We'll find somebody. And it turned out to be this fellow in a band called the Pepper Potts. And he was a musician. And he kind of more or less looked like Paul. He was a little bit taller, a little bit different shape. But they reckon with plastic surgery, they could just about get some, you know, quite a decent lookalike. So, and they started also, you know, giving him, he had plastic tips for his nose and ears, so they would look more like his. And gradually they've given him plastic surgery over the years. And you can see on various pictures and evidence of plastic surgery having been done on him. And that's why they grew the beards, because Paul had had so much plastic surgery on his mouth that they had to wear false moustaches and beards.
Now, did this Fall guy, did he play bass? Was he left-handed, or did he have to learn how to play bass left-handed?
He was a right-handed piano player, okay? Because, all right, so yeah, I'll go into some like corroborating facts later.
Okay.
But he was a right-handed piano player, but he was he's a very talented man. Let's not get this wrong. He is a very talented performer. He's very good at imitating people. If you ever heard him on shows, you know, on interviews, you know, he does all these different accents. He's really good at that sort of stuff. He's got different colored eyes to Paul, who we call John Paul, right? John Paul McCartney. That's he's the original Paul. Let's have a look at some of the album years. You'll see, John Paul McCartney, is about the same height as Lennon when he's standing next to him. But in later years, Fall is a good couple of inches taller than everybody. He's also depicted on each album cover as looking in a different direction to the rest of the band.
Right.
That's one of the big, these are the album cover clues, right? But anyway, so we got this guy who's more or less just about right, but he is a musician, but I believe from listening to different styles that the style went from a very kind of country and western kind of style. You know, the real Paul McCartney is it's bouncy, right? If you listen to, I believe that George Harrison played a lot of the bass parts on the albums. So the stuff like Come Together, that's a pure blues riff played on the bass. And I firmly believe that that's George Harrison playing there, because Fall he'll be present on Let It Be, right? So you listen to Let It and that'll be Paul playing, because you can see them rehearse. You see all the films of them rehearsing, and he's pretending, he's getting in. It's rather sick, because they're all sitting around looking really quite sorry for themselves and miserable, and Paul's bullying them and you know, egging them on, and doing this awful Paul McCartney impression thing of, you know, swinging his head from side to side with that little fake smile. And it's actually, you know, it's quite disturbing. Once you look at this thing with these eyes, it can be quite a disturbing thing to look at the Beatles. And it becomes almost macabre as, you know, this psychedelic, brightly coloured stuff all kind of melts away. And you see this rather grey reality behind it. Anyway, so where have I got to? So we've got McCartney, who's very gradually being turned into McCartney. They even went to India to try and find a guru to do the thing. Did you ever see that with me, with Steve Martin?
No.
All right. Okay. Well, it depicts a very rich woman who has her soul, who wanted to have her soul transferred from her body into a young body.
Okay.
And they enlisted this guru to do it, and the Tibetan bowl contained the soul. It flicked out of his hand. It falls down out of the window onto Steve Martin's head, who's already got a personality. So he has these two personalities in his body and is absolutely brilliant. I mean, he's a genius. I love Steve Martin. Some people don't like it, but physical comedy is absolute master. And he's brilliant. It really looks like he's got two people in his body in this film. Anyway, so they wanted to do that with Paul. So they wanted to grab John Paul's soul and to put it into the body of Paul. And that's why they went to India. And of course it didn't happen. So they all came back and never went back. But that's the story of why they went to India. Now what else happened? Yeah, so he's a left-handed piano player, boogie woogie piano player, like Lady Madonna, right. So all the music that involves him is den 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 den, and you can hear it all the way through Wings and all this stuff. But it's like, and also, you know, they slow it down, and that becomes the Beatles' kind of signature sound, doesn't it? They have this kind of repeated piano. Oh, you hit a piano. Oh, that sounds like the Beatles, doesn't it? Right. Well, it actually sounds like Paul, because he brought that in. You know, if you listen to any of the 66, if they had a keyboard part, it would be George Martin who played that. Listen to In My Life. You know, it's got this little kind of Bach-like piece, Baroque piece, in the middle of it, and that's played by George Martin. It's not played by Paul McCartney, you know. And if Paul McCartney could play the piano at that time, why didn't he play that bit of piano? Because certainly in 1968 he plays pieces of piano like that, and you hear that in Revolution Number 9, that kind of pastiche, that collage sort of soundscape.
Yeah. And in Wings, he mostly plays piano instead of the bass.
Exactly. Exactly. You'll see him, he's happy at a piano. Hey, Jude.
Right.
Yeah. God. Anyway, so it's just annoying, you know, to see that face, knowing that he's a fake, looking at the whole world, knowing that he's a fake. They must have mind controlled him. They must have convinced him that he is who he is.
I was going to bring that up. How could he keep this secret for so long? They probably did, you know, brainwash him, make him really think he was Paul. I'm wondering if they could brainwash him to become left-handed.
Maybe he's been altered. You know, and it's really interesting now, having, you know, done these radio shows and met people who have been through the Montauk, been through the MK Ultra, knowing what I know now and applying this to what I could perceive, you know, back in, it doesn't sound like so much of a strange idea now. You know, all these things in the '60s. Oh yeah, everything that was science fiction then seems to have actually been true on one level, you know, with one group of the civilization. So, anyway, so McCartney had a girlfriend. She was called Jane Asher, she must have. I don't know what they did to her because she's kept silent. She's not died mysteriously. However, there has been a trail of mysterious and unfortunate deaths, hasn't there? Starting with Brian Epstein, their manager.
I don't know about that one. I thought all the managers and engineers were paid off.
Mm-hmm.
To keep quiet.
Mm.
Brian Epstein, Jeff Emmerich, Mal Evans.
Yes.
So how did Epstein die? I don't know about that one.
Epstein died apparently of, because I met his niece once, and she said that he took he'd taken some sleeping pills, and he had some alcohol, so took some sleeping pills, and took another set of sleeping pills, and that's what killed him. That was a story that her family got, his family got. And this is a true thing, and that the MI5 were involved, and it was therefore part of, you know, what you call a black operation. And the penalty for revealing this deep secret was death. Then we see a trail. And we see the trail starting at Brian Epstein, who was obviously rather distressed about this. It then perhaps has something to do with Brian Jones's death and the Rolling Stones, who were their friends. Okay, because their friends would notice, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would know off.
Yeah. Another person who would notice would be a rock photographer. And Linda Eastman was a rock photographer at the time. And she, obviously, as a photographer, you have to do images, you know, do faces well. She went up to him and said, I know who you're not. And here's the clincher, and this is the thing that really, really broke everything apart, was that she said to him, marry me and make me a rock star, or I'll tell the world who you are. And that, I believe, Michael, is the essence of why the Beatles broke up, or why they hated each other. What the big deal was. That was the big deal. Is that was a real random element that shouldn't have happened, because they were just wanting to kind of finish the thing, and McCartney could fade into obscurity. He couldn't have become famous. It's made it all together too complicated. But obviously he had his own agenda. Right? So.
And we're back with The Art of Dreaming here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, where you don't need to expect us because we are already here. All right, I'm joined by JP from Journeys with JP, and we've been talking about the story behind Fall McCartney. So where we left off, we were talking that Linda Evans forced him to marry her, and they formed Wings. JP? I seem to have lost JP.
No, it's all right.
You're not. Okay.
My mouse. I'm moving house, and everything's piled on top of each other, and my mouse is not quite making contact. Okay. So it took a while to get to that unmute button. Meanwhile, yes, Linda Eastman has espied Paul and says, "I know that who you're not, or certainly, you know, you're different from who you say you are." And of course, you know, he didn't want her to die, because that's the thing. If he reports people having breached the confidence, then they die just not very long afterwards, it appears. So he quite fancied her, and thought that that would be a good idea. So he probably said, yeah, of course, you know, I'm of course in the Beatles and all this stuff. And so they got married, and Jane Asher was dumped with a typewritten letter. Very, you know, sort of, it appeared to be, you know, he seemed to be quite cold about it, you know. But of course, you know, that was a different Paul McCartney, to the one who was into Linda Eastman. And, again, if you watch the footage of when Paul, quote Paul, Fall and Linda, get married, it's really unemotional affair. It's really, you know, oh yeah, it's almost cynical in the way they're behaving with each other. They don't look like they're in love. Really. They really don't. So, where are we? So there's Linda, and I believe that blackmail by Linda, she, you know, made him take it seriously. Eventually they hooked up with Denny Lane and da-di-da-di-da. And Denny Lane was, he was from the Small Faces, and he actually did have some talent. All the good songs like Band on the Run, you know, that was him. But you hear, you know, Mary had a little lamb, you know, for God's sake, I mean, joking. Anyway, so back to the mid-60s with the rest of the Beatles, right? So there's John, who's just lost his best mate and has been replaced by a clone, you know. They have to pretend to be friends still. But there's, you know, there's a tension between them. And then if you look at the film, the video they made for Penny Lane, and you see them walking down these Liverpool streets. And, if you, you know, hold in your mind what's happened, and you look at Lennon's face and you think, this looks like the man who's lost his best mate. It does. So I'd like to pull a few things together here, to place my case, unless you have some questions, Michael.
No, keep on going. I'm just reading about William Shears Campbell. So that's apparently Fall's real name.
Yeah.
Billy Shears.
Yeah, Billy, yeah. Or Billy's Here.
Billy's Here.
Sergeant Pepper, because he was in the Pepper Potts. I think even Sergeant, because he was like a policeman or something like that, or that was one idea. And of course, you know, that he may not even be English. He may be Canadian.
Hmm.
And that might be Ontario Police Patrol or something like that. That was the OPP on his shoulder. But anyway, there's loads of stories. So let's hit the album covers. The most famous one is the now quite obvious grave of Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. So many clues on this, you could spend an hour looking at, you know, taking this thing together. But the first one is, if you take a mirror and reflect the bass drum, right in the middle of the bass drum, it goes one. O-N-E-I-X, he die, which is like, now the thing is, in Britain, when you specify death, you specify the first, then the month, then the year. In America, you do it the other way around. So that's why 9/11 is September the 11th. Now, in Britain, the 11th of September would be 11/9. And that's what's written on the bass drum. It's 11 IX is 11th of September. So I'm reading from that he actually died on the 11th of September 1966. There are also theories that the original McCartney was actually killed in a ritual slaughter and replaced like that. I'm not sure about that, but there is this very dark side to the whole thing, and that also comes in with the thing that they call backwards masking. But we'll cover that in a minute. So back to the cover of Sergeant Pepper. The first thing you see is a grave right in the middle of the rectangle of freshly dug dirt. And in that grave is the word Beatles. So this is the death of the Beatles. Below that, there's a bouquet or a bunch of flowers that spell out the letters Paul and are, in fact, shaped like a bass guitar, like Paul used to play, left-handed, it's facing the left-handed direction. It's got four sticks on it that look like strings, things like that. There is a toy white car, like the car that Paul McCartney drove. There's a blood-stained driving glove. All sorts of things, and all the people have something to do with death. All the people who are standing at the graveside have something to do with death. And in fact, the picture of Paul McCartney, out. It was a photograph of the 3D Beatles plus this cardboard cutout Paul McCartney in the blue. So standing right in the middle he's actually a cardboard cutout. Is a two dimensional character.
Right. We also have Marilyn Monroe, who, some say was killed by the CIA because she knew too much.
Yeah, all sorts of people, all sorts of very interesting folk on that. Like I said, you could go on for hours, and I don't know it all. The cover was absolutely covered with them. There's this picture of him in the middle, and he's got this suit that says OPD, officially pronounced dead. And on the back, they're all facing forward, and he's facing back. George Harrison is pointing to Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock. Sir?
Hang on. Yeah, keep going. I'm talking to someone.
All right. So, anyway, the Tavistock Institute and the music industry does indeed have a very strong connection with this, because Tavistock is MI5, and Maxwell was connected with MI5, and presumably everything that you've got in Black Ops over in America, we've got over here because of the unique relationship that we have, the famous special relationship between America and Britain, which the actual nature of is that Brits spy on Americans and Americans spy on Brits. That's how they get around with not being able to spy on their own people. They do a deal where they swap data between GCHQ and the NSA. Anyway, so that's amazing. We've still got the line. Anyway, that's the special relationship between Britain and this could be a hoax. The middle's secret is most likely the fact that McCartney is a Satanist, not a clone, not a double, not dead. Now, I'd like to address the idea that this is not the same man as the person we know as John Paul McCartney. Okay. Let's take the physical thing. We've already done the musical thing, right? His musical style of playing is completely different. He makes different music. He's a very good singer. He's very disciplined, he's very diligent at doing what he does. But he's a plodder, you know. His music plods, dang, 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 dang. Okay. Let's look at his physical characteristics now. Investigation. These people had convicted murderers and all sorts of people. They had a good track record, basically, of being able to identify and recognize faces. They'd heard about it. They wanted to disprove it, and they thought they could disprove it in 5 minutes. And of course, they ended up proving it, because these two men have very different faces. You know, if you line up the eyes, one has a rounder face, and one has a longer face. The ears are different, and ears can be, you know, absolutely unique to every human. And the ears are very different, you know, in the way it folds. And you can't really disguise that, you know, because it's just, you know, you can't really wear very fake ears. Although the current Sir Paul McCartney has enormous ears at the moment. Anyway, so there's all these different facial characters, and the main one, the one that really you know, does it for me, is the eyebrow thing. When look at John Paul McCartney's brow, his hairline is very close to his eyebrows, maybe an inch and a half or 2 inches.
Okay.
You look at pictures of Paul as he's, you know, as he's cut his hair shorter and shorter, and you see that he's got an enormous gap between his eyebrows and his hairline. And it's not a receding hairline thing. He's got a massive forehead. It's like a big vertical cliff. Whereas John Paul had his head went, you know, it started sweeping back from his eyebrows. The shape of his face, the way his features sweep away from the back of his nose. You look at the profiles. Your promo picture. You can see quite clearly that the shape of the face from the side was very different. The mouth. If you look at John Paul McCartney, had quite a narrow mouth, and you can't fix that. You can't fake that. You can't plastic surgery this out. He had quite a narrow mouth, and and Paul has a much wider mouth. So, and also a much longer top lip. Thank you very much, darling. So basically the people who tried to disprove him, chocolate as well. Thank you. The people that tried to disprove him, actually ended up proving, yes, he's a fake. So, he's not the same. Here's a new one that I've just come across, and this is quite interesting, is that in 1962 the Beatles were big in Hamburg, and they had they had girlfriends, and McCartney had a girlfriend, and it appears that she got pregnant, and they got big and left Hamburg and came back to Britain, and this child grows up. So she puts out a paternity suit, and I think this is the 70s, and this is, it's all reported in, local newspapers and things like that. And, so they send Paul along to have a blood test. And of course, his blood doesn't match this child. So he's like, oh yeah, obviously it's not, we didn't have a child. But what the woman said was very telling, and she said, "No, this isn't true. They sent a double. This wasn't the real Paul McCartney. Please send the real one." So, excuse me, I have to cough. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was being distracted by my daughter. Did you talk about the back cover clues of Sgt. Pepper's?
The back cover, yeah, the fact that he's looking in the opposite direction. Again, all the photographs from 67 onwards, Paul was looking in the different direction, and he's actually facing backwards on the back cover.
And he's got a red background too.
Yeah. On Let It Be, he's got the red background.
On Let It Be, and also the Sgt. Pepper's.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. It says George Harrison pointing to some lyrics. The lyrics, Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins.
That's right.
Which would, apparently Paul died at 5 a.m. on Wednesday.
Yes, yes, that's the idea. There's that clue. There's the backwards masking, right? Do you know what backwards masking is?
Yeah, that's the recording, right?
Yeah, it was where you. I did a little experiment. I don't think it's on SoundCloud anymore. No, I think I took it off. But basically, what you do is you record your sayings and then you play it backwards. You then rehearse the sound that you hear when you're playing it backwards, and then you record that and play that backwards. So it comes out sort of semi-forwards. And that's how you get a message across. It sounds like you're saying something, but when you do it backwards, you're saying something else. And, you know, it's the same as you were talking about in Stairway to Heaven, you know.
Yeah. Although the Pink Floyd actually did it intentionally at some point on the Wall.
Mm.
I can't remember.
All right, did they?
Yeah, I can't remember which song it was. Was it The Wall or was it, or maybe it was one of the other, one of the songs, there is a backwards message saying, if you receive the message, write us a letter at, and it gives an address.
All right.
Yeah, so Revolution number 9, saying what, turn me on, dead man?
Oh, yeah, well, when you reverse, you know, very plainly, if you reverse Revolution, no, is it number 9? Number 9? Number 9? Yeah. It's with what we call in Britain the RP accent, the received pronunciation, as a BBC, the old style BBC reporters all spoke. You know, so Queen's English, number 9? Number 9? And if you reverse that, it sounds like, hand me on, dead man, hand me on, dead man. Which is, you know, people say, you know, that's Turn Me On, Dead Man. That's what I heard when I was a kid. He said, check out Revolution 9. He's turning it back. He goes, Turn Me On, Dead Man. Oh, right. Really? Yeah. And what's that about the Kentucky Fried stuff? Anyway.
And,
so.
And the song I'm So Tired comes out backwards. Paul's a dead man. Miss him, miss him.
Yeah. Miss him. Paul's a dead. And there's all the, and at the end of Strawberry Fields, after the introduction of ding, 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 you hear this, as it fades away, he's going, I buried Paul. And the idea is that, yeah, they indeed, did, you know, personally have a personal, funeral in Blackpool for him. Blackpool is a place, it's where people in Liverpool go on holiday. So it's like the nearest holiday town to, Liverpool. And I was passing through. I thought I'd try and track down the cemetery. I passed through Blackpool on a driving thing last year. Of course, I never made it. It's just it completely changed. But it was a very quiet affair, and that's what the story of Eleanor Rigby, and it's Father McCartney, you know, picks up the writing the words to a sermon that no one will hear. Was the idea that he's everybody knew him, so he really didn't need to say anything. That's the idea of behind Eleanor Rigby, anyway. And so essentially, what became of the Beatles' music was that they'd had some half-finished songs, and that basically Paul was employed by the Beatles to perform the part of Paul McCartney. That was their relationship. That's why they were all very, very upset when McCartney got hold of the rights to the Beatles, because he doesn't really own the songs. They were all very upset with that, particularly George. George seemed to get really upset about him. Where were we? We've got some... Oh, wow. We're nearly done, are we?
No, no, my show is 2 hours.
2 hours. Oh, that's great.
Well, we have plenty of time.
Oh, plenty of time.
Well, there was always a thing. The song The Glass Onion, the lyrics say, I told you about the walrus and me. You know what closest can be. Well, here's another clue for you all. The walrus was Paul.
This was Paul. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to the original car accident where Maxwell describes... describes them as, it looks like a walrus.
So then the song Bang Bang Maxwell is about...
Yeah. Now, he drove a car that was called a Silver Hammer. You know, back in the days when cars had names.
Right.
Maxwell had a Silver Hammer, apparently. What's the thing? And obviously being like, you know, he was like one of your CIA guys and not very nice. And he once he discovered that, you know, somebody said, oh, look what the Beatles are doing, all these clues on the album covers, that he said, he rounded them up and said, we could easily find some crazed fan or car accident, and we can off the lot of you. You're not to do this again. And they gave, you know, each of them got a big punch in the stomach. And there's an album cover where they're all sitting in white lab coats and they're covered in meat and like decapitated dolls' heads. It's called Beatles Yesterday and Today. Mm-hmm. That cover was pulled. And they replaced it with another cover of Paul in a coffin. He was sitting by a suitcase, but it was, you know, if you turn it sideways, Paul looks like he's in a coffin. And then you've got, so Beatles Yesterday and Today had all this stuff, blood and white coats and baby dolls with decapitated heads and things like that.
And your host is Michael Hemmingson. I'm still Michael Hemmingson, Doc H. Worf Poe, and this is The Art of Dreaming on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Just want to remind everyone out there that Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com is 100% listener-supported. That means we don't run ads. We don't take corporate ads or uncorporate ads. The only kind of ads you might hear are bumpers for shows and maybe a product or two that a host is promoting, like conferences or books or whatever. So if you go to our landing page over there, freedomslips.com or revolution-radio.com, you will see a site support button, which will take you to PayPal, and you can send whatever you feel like sending, $1, $2, $5, $10, $100. If you don't use PayPal, there's a snail mail address there, and you can send money orders or checks, but please don't send cash through the mails. Also, you can send gold, silver, diamonds, and uranium. I'm sure that Nighthawk could monetize those. And I was just talking to a friend right now online about how cool it is, you know, the way the Internet works now and Skype, and how we could do a radio show with me in Tijuana, Mexico, JP over in England or Scotland. Where are you, JP? I forgot. Was Scotland or England?
I'm in northern Scotland, yeah, near Inverness.
Northern Scotland. So here I'm in Mexico. Server is in Kentucky.
That's right. We're second and third world.
Yeah, and people couldn't do this 5 years ago, 10 years
Absolutely.
Ago.
Absolutely. I still think it's magic, you know. You know, I've been doing computers since 1979 and working networks and stuff like that.
Well, I think
I think email is magic.
Well, it's magical that I have bandwidth since I'm at a Starbucks and there's, you know, a dozen other people online, but I guess they got good internet here at Starbucks.
Yeah, well, it's certainly good enough for your audio, and that's what all that matters, really.
Yeah, I got a little distracted about half an hour ago because my my wife and child showed up at Starbucks. They didn't know I was here, and so they were...
You were hiding from them.
That's what they were saying. They're like, what did you do, run off and hide? But she always forgets that I have a show on Wednesdays, and I could do the show from home, but the internet's spotty there, and then my daughter wants to play on the computer, so it's, you know, I'd rather do it at Starbucks here. Starbucks.
So, live from Starbucks in Mexico.
Yeah, live from Starbucks in Mexico and northern Scotland, by way of a farm in Kentucky.
So. You're somewhere, you're in, all right, okay. Brilliant, yeah. Kentucky. So, where are we?
So we're talking about the, one of the album covers, the biggest one, of course, is Abbey Road.
Yeah.
With the clues. I mean, we got Paul McCartney, Billy Shears. He's walking out of step of the other three Beatles. He's barefoot in a suit, holding a cigarette. We got John Lennon dressed all in white, supposedly the preacher, We got Ringo Starr dressed all in black, supposedly like Undertaker.
Undertaker, yeah.
In England, they buried, you know, people are buried without their shoes on, mm-hmm. and in suits. So we got Paul, and he's walking differently than the other three. The other three have their left foot forward, and he has his right foot forward. And then George Harrison is dressed, you know, in jeans and a blue shirt, supposedly the Gravedigger.
That's right.
And then in the background, we have a Volkswagen Beetle with license plate 28F, I guess indicating the real McCartney would have been 28 when that album came out,
mm-hmm.
which was 1968.
And the other thing that other people don't notice so much, but on the other side of the road, just beyond the crossing, you'll see a Black Mariah.
Uh-huh.
And the Black Mariah is is what we used to know as the police van.
Okay.
It's a special, you know, it's a particular van that was used by the police in those days as the, you know, nowadays they use Ford Transits, but in those days they had this particular thing, and it was known as the Black Mariah. And standing next to it is supposedly Maxwell.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
My photos too. Yeah, I'll have to check. Oh, I see him. Okay.
Yeah.
The real Maxwell or just someone?
Perhaps just someone.
Yeah, just someone.
So, So meanwhile, people are dying.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because now Linda Eastman knew Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
And Jimi Hendrix was really into the truth. So it probably bugged a lot of people in the music industry at that time about this thing, because I can imagine that this guy wasn't as nice as the real Paul. In fact, all right, here's a little test we can do. You can easily pull up the covers of the Beatles' Red and Blue albums. So I think you can just type into Google Red and Blue album covers Beatles, and the photograph was taken looking up a stairwell, and the four are looking down, and it's just like, is this really obvious that it's really, really apparent that the guy who's second from the left, everybody else looks just the same, but the guy second to the left they look very different from cover to cover. If you're someone who's sensitive to people's energies, and you look in the eyes of the two guys, they're very different vibrations. So Paul was right-handed, Tanji, and Paul was left-handed. And in fact, there's a little snippet of Paul playing the guitar right-handed. It was when he got busted for marijuana in Japan, and he did a little kind of promo video to say sorry to the Japanese. And you can see that you're looking at the same face, and the way they've dropped his left eye down is to see that is, you know, he's, the picture is not being reversed, is what I'm trying to get to. That he's actually playing this thing right-handed, as is, you know, that's what he'd do normally. And that actually he didn't spend that much time playing the bass, left-handed. Most of the time he was on the piano. You can see also when he's playing the bass, in the very rare moments that they did actually perform live and play the bass, that he's looking down at his hands all the time. Whereas the original Paul McCartney looks straight ahead, because they've been playing in Hamburg, 12 hours a night. You get to know your instrument. You can play it without looking. Unlike me, I'm always looking down at my fingers. Shoegazing, they call it that these days. And it just wasn't done, you know, in those days. If you were a performer, you looked at the audience. You didn't look down at your fingers. So that's another thing that Paul does. That is a bit of a giveaway. He very much was really emphasizing his left-handedness. Although in Abbey Road, he's holding the cigarette in his right hand, isn't he? Has it got the right hand facing the camera?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his right leg is going forwards.
Hmm. So, something not right.
Well, also on the Let It Be album cover, the Fall is, he's the only one with a red background.
That's right.
And he's got a full beard and his mouth is covered by a microphone.
Hmm.
And the eyes look a little different than other photos, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you even if you look at that the Red and the Blue album, the eyes of the from the 67, they look scary. I mean, really, they look very different, like psycho eyes. I don't know. And he does have that. You often see these photos of him, and he's got these really scary looks on his face. That the original Paul, I mean, he was a lad, but he wasn't scary. He wasn't threatening. He was a really personable man.
So
yes.
He got busted for pot in Japan. I didn't know it was illegal for pot in Japan. I guess it was back then.
They smuggled it through the airport.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The airport. Yeah. Linda had some on her, and so they were doing a tour, and the Wings tour got cancelled, and you know, they had to go back, and it was all very embarrassing, and yeah, and the Japanese people were very disappointed. So yeah, apparently the pot smoking habit came from when he was having plastic surgery, and it helped him with the pain of it, apparently, and it kind of stuck with him.
Now, so you're indicating that Jimi Hendrix was killed because he knew he was going to spill the beans or something?
I think so. I mean, this is getting out into the realms of my speculation.
Okay.
But if you mentally trace this path, you can see that either side of the path there are stiffs. You know, there are dead bodies lying around. So we start off with Brian Jones and Brian Epstein, and then Jimi Hendrix. And then 10 years later, according to the George Harrison film, John was about to call, he was about to go public with it. He said, "Oh, you know, we've seen this. You know, it's been 10 years. Let's go public with this. You know, I'm going to go public." The only people he spoke to were George and Fall, and presumably Ringo as well. Ringo is remarkably silent about everything. He doesn't like to talk to anybody about it. And that's, you know, it's very, very understandable because, you know, they must be so tired of having to lie and it's very draining. So, it was about 2 weeks before, John was murdered that he said that he would go public. And similarly, it was 2 weeks before, that he made this tape. After he'd been stabbed, that he was going to go public, and he said it to Fall. And 2 weeks later, this happened. So I'm presuming that Fall is in touch with Maxwell, and that they work closely. That you know, that he probably has various agency things, and that's why he's a sir. That he's done the Queen's bidding, the Crown's bidding.
And so she knighted him for it.
Yeah.
I mean, why is it so important to kill people off to keep this a secret even up to this point?
Oh, it's an official secret, and it's like, you know, a presidential executive order. It gets done. Okay. If somebody says to the CIA, this guy has to die, you know, you don't even have to put it that way. I mean, Obama can just say, you know, deal with this guy. Doesn't matter, you know. It's just, and so, so there's this string. Now, there's the other thing is about the Heather Mills thing. In this Harrison film, and somebody brought it up before. In this Harrison film, it says that Heather Mills was the woman who was in the car. Now that would be impossible, because this. So it can't be Heather Mills, but it's got to it It could be Heather Mills's mother, who was known as Rita, and she was the woman that was in the car that lunged at him. And she was taken away on a witness protection program and moved to another part of the country. Now, in those days, you could easily make a new life for yourself somewhere else. So that's where I think that they put her up there. And then Heather Mills has a box of stuff that is supposedly explosive. So it's got some kind of proof in it. Maybe the documents from the witness protection program or something like that. So that's where the Heather Mills thing came in. So she knows the truth about him as well, and presumably blackmailed him into whatever she blackmailed him into. It's full of intrigue, this whole thing.
So, was there anyone else you think was killed? I mean, like, what about Jim Morrison? You think that's connected?
I'm not sure about Jim, and you know, of course, there's loads of them. There was Mama Cass, there was Jim Morrison, who else died that year? Janis Joplin. I'm not entirely sure if they were connected in with this whole thing. Not entirely sure at all, that. But, these seem to be connected in and closely aligned enough to possibly be part of this thing.
Well, there's something new about Jim Morrison. I mean, of course, there's been that guy in, I don't know where he was, he's in Texas or New Mexico, claims to be Jim Morrison, and the stories that he faked his death. One of them I heard recently, I think it was on Coast to Coast, and I haven't researched it, I keep meaning to dig into it, but there was a guy on who said there was a book coming out, I think he said it was coming out February 2013, with a chapter where a CIA agent did a deathbed confession that he had been on a submarine leaving Greece in, I don't know, was it 71 or whenever Morrison was supposed to have died, and Morrison was on the submarine. Now, his father, Jim Morrison's father, was an admiral in the Navy, and he was a top head guy in the Office of Naval Intelligence. He ran everything in the Southeast Division during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a top guy who handled covert ops, and apparently this guy had said, well, Morrison wanted out. He knew he had gotten information that they were going to kill him. I don't know, maybe about the Paul McCartney thing, but, you know, because other people mm-hmm. had been dying, and he wanted out of he wanted to disappear, and he told his father this, and his father arranged an extraction and a cover-up, which is something the ONI does.
That's right.
Intelligence. So his father put him on, you know, they faked his death and faked a grave site in Paris, put him on this submarine from Greece that went to a substation in New Mexico, where he was giving a new identity. And this agent said he was on the ship with Morrison, and Morrison told him what happened. That's something I want to look into. I keep meaning to dig more into that.
You know, Michael, yeah. We've discovered so many things over the last few years about what really happened, what's really real, and what we've been told. And who can say that anything that you've seen on that tube has ever been real? How do we know? We don't know, because it's just been shown as flickers on a screen.
Well, so that certainly seems to be the word going around about the Aurora and Sandy Hook shootings, that these were fabricated incidents.
Absolutely, completely and utterly faked. Exactly. And, you know, you look carefully at pictures of the Twin Towers, and that's a Hollywood thing, you know, when a plane crashes into a building and all the flames come out. That's a Hollywood thing. That doesn't happen in real life, you know?
Right.
What I saw in real life was a building being demolished, to me, because I've seen a building being demolished, a tower block being demolished, and it looks just like that, you know? That's not a building falling down. So, you know, we're told one thing and we see another, But because we believe what we're told, we learn to ignore the cognitive dissonance. There's that thing again, where you see something, but you feel something else. And I think this is really, this is why I think it's interesting to Revolution Radio listeners, because it's part of all of the different cover-ups that we've been subjected to probably since 1948.
Since the Roswell crash?
Yeah.
Well, my theory behind all that is that, you know, especially with all the clues that are coming out with Sandy Hook, number one, well, they, and 9/11 is that they know only a small fraction of people, us, you know, in the alt media scene and stuff like that, conspiracy theorists, are going to figure these things out. They're more concerned with the masses. That 95% are going to buy the story, and 95%. Don't even want to deal with conspiracies and think about it. I mean, they've got, you know, they're worrying about paying their rent and their bills, and they have their own lives to be, you know, pondering on all this stuff. So as long as they sell it to the 95% masses, they could care less what we figure out.
That's right. Until 94% believe.
Exactly.
And then that's when it starts. But, so, you know, now, like I'm saying, you know, our audience is educated into the behavior of these agencies. You know, we know what Black Ops people do. We know what ONI kind of people do. We know how CIA operates and, you know, all of these things, you know, how they can foment a struggle can foment a revolution in a distant land. We've been watching that. We get the revolution, then we, you know, then the bombs come in, and, you know, the same thing goes on and on and on. It's the same trick. It's like they don't know any others, a one-trick pony thing. So once you start seeing that, it becomes a little more obvious when you look at things, when you look at events that happen. And like you're saying, the Sandy Hook thing is, that's almost like, are you not getting this? Hello? You know, are you really, really, really that stupid that you believe all this? You know, yeah. And go on.
Well, there was a group on last night on the round table talking about Sandy Hook, and I was too lazy to get on, but I've mentioned this before, is that with that one in Aurora, the clues and things are so damn obvious, like you're saying, but I'm also thinking of, maybe they want us to see that. They're actually, it's just a distraction for something else. And what I think these things are just test runs for something really big. You know, test runs to see how many people will buy it, how they could portray it on the media, because they're gearing up for a really huge false flag.
Yeah. But I just think they've been really sloppy this last one.
Really? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether they're being sloppy because there's infighting going on, or whether there's internal power struggles, or whether they're just, the mind control is not working right anymore. You know, who's to say that, you know, solar activity is causing what they thought was a stable mind-controlled person to behave more erratically? Maybe less controllable.
Right.
I don't know. But I mean, the possibility is open. Anyway.
Well, like the song Glass Onion, the first two lines of the song are, I told you about strawberry fields, you know, the place where nothing is real. Is strawberry fields, is that an indication to something? I can't remember what that was.
No, there's the real places.
Oh, they're real places. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been to Liverpool. My best friend when I was young got married there, and he actually got married in Penny Lane, and I stayed in a hotel in Penny Lane. It was, you know, about 20, 30 years later than the music was made, but you know, there's a roundabout and Penny Lane, there is a you know, there's a barbershop and all of the, you know, it's a real place. And of course, you know, there's Paul McCartney's down, 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 piano playing on Penny Lane. You hear that? Or four, you know. I keep, you know, because I'm still programmed. Yeah, I'm still subject to the programming. And I have to catch myself. And it's really interesting because it's so deep. And if it, and you see, my thinking is, if that thing has been programmed that deeply, what else is in my head that shouldn't be there?
Right.
So.
So what happened to Maxwell?
Well,
he can't still be around, right?
No, not unless they've got some sort of longevity program, but he's probably retired already. I mean, he was probably quite old at the time. You know, if there's a statute order, then there is presumably some team that is on the case. Still now. It's probably got some, they're probably like, it's the cover-up department, you know, rather than just the Paul McCartney cover-up team, because there's probably other cover-ups. That then brings me onto the whole establishment, paedophile network, and Jimmy Savile scandal that's been coming out recently. Something I noticed, I was watching, I should have known better with a girl like you.
Right.
I love everything. Right now, there's an actor there. He was quite famous in the 1960s. He played a character called Albert Steptoe, and his name was Wilfred Bramble. This is the name of the actor. And,
Yeah.
And in this Beatles video, there he is, sitting right next to Paul McCartney. And, you know, touched them. And there's Wilfred Bramble in this cage, sitting next to McCartney. And I'm thinking, what the heck is Wilfred Bramble doing there? Because Wilfred Bramble has recently been named as one of the major child molesters in a children's home in the Channel Island of Jersey. There is an ongoing cover-up stroke investigation, stroke cover-up stroke investigation going on there, as, you know, police are, you know, well, basically, you know, there's a paedophile ring, and they would go into these children's homes, and they would take the children that they wanted to take and do what they wanted to do, and it was like a supermarket for them. And there are children's homes all over Britain where this has happened, and these, not just actors, but high-level politicians. But this particular actor was known as a known paedophile, and he's sitting there grooving along. Or he's just kind of sitting there staring at McCartney. It's a really weird video. You can see it on YouTube. And, you know, it's the original John Paul McCartney that we're talking about. It's the I Should Have Known Better video. You can check it out. And so there's this connection with this paedophile ring going on, which probably went through all of the music business at the time. Because there were probably plenty of underage girls to choose from, you know, following the Beatles around, which is probably why he was hanging around with them. But anyway, that's another story.
Right.
But it's part of the big cover-up that we recently got a little taster of. There was a man called Jimmy Savile in Britain. Have you heard about this?
No.
All right. Jimmy Savile was, he started out as a dance hall owner, and then became a DJ on our national pop music station at the time. And he was very English eccentric kind of fellow, and he had this this accent, which was is kind of annoying, really. And he, actually, if you look at him now, he used to wear brightly colored tracksuits. He was dripping with bling, as we say nowadays, and smoking a fat cigar. He looked like a right. Although at the time he was just kind of some kind of eccentric bloke, because we didn't have people like that there, not in Britain anyway. And so this guy turns out not only to be a molester of young women, but he was a pedophile, he was a necrophile, and he was a procurer, a fixer. You know, if there was a party going on, they had some VIPs, he would, whatever the VIPs would require, he would go and get. You know, if they wanted a smoke, he'd get a smoke. If they liked girls, he'd get girls. If they liked boys, he'd get boys. And if he liked children, he'd get some children. And that was the way he was, and he was a fixer. And he even had a TV show. I mean, this is so sick. How sick. It was a show that was called Jim'll Fix It. And it's like, I mean, how cynically is this named?
But he was also, I see he was also a knight.
Yeah. You know why? He would procure for the rich and famous and the royals.
Right.
Yeah. He's been shown so many times with pictures of Prince Charles. They were good buddies. Right? Now, let's just veer off into this dark world of the paedophile network of the British establishment for a moment.
Okay.
BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation, which was also implicated and involved in the 9/11 fakery. Remember the film? There's the BBC, and she's reading off a script.
Oh,
man. And the script was badly timed, and
right.
It should have been 20 minutes later.
Right.
And there's Building 7 sitting in the background. Oh, Building 7's just falling down.
Right.
And there it is sitting in the background. So the BBC is much darker than its friendly auntie image. They always call it Auntie Beeb, you know. But it's actually a very dark situation, and they're part of the, part of the media, the disinformation, but they do a lot more than that. I won't go so far into it, but this is the work of David Hawkins and Field McConnell. They've uncovered an awful lot about all the different guilds that were involved, and also about the connection with the BBC. So anyway, meanwhile, back at Britain, we've got this this paedophile ring that is being supplied by this guy. There's Gary Glitter and all sorts of celebrities involved. But what is not spoken about are these politicians. And then last week, or a couple of weeks ago, there was this one big politician who was supposedly on a list, who starts suing everybody on Twitter who says he's a paedophile, which is very strange because nobody anywhere has said he's a paedophile. He's just sued everybody who said, you know, nobody in the press has said it, but he's kind of implicated himself, you know, by accusing everybody of saying, you know, oh, I'm a paedophile. And he's actually made all these out-of-court settlements. So he's made a fortune out of this. And he's standing scot-free. So he's got to be one of the big Bilderbergers. Just in order to have that kind of influence. That he's got these massive teams of lawyers who are the nastiest in the world, who are going around suing everybody. Anyway, meanwhile, turns out that a former prime minister was supplied. Now, actually, it seems like several former prime ministers, including from the late 60s and early 70s, Edward Heath. He was well supplied by Jimmy Savile. And it turns out that Gordon Brown. Now, Gordon Brown did something very, very silly a few years ago, and nobody could understand why, because Gordon Brown is a genius. You know, he's really good with numbers, not a good people person. But he was Chancellor of the Exchequer. But I believe that he was blackmailed into selling off Britain's gold really cheap in order to cover some shorts that JP Morgan had.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Well, it might not have been JP Morgan, but it is a big financial institution. He did somebody a favor because I believe they were blackmailing him, because no sane man would do what he did. He sold British gold off at rock bottom prices.
Wow.
Mm. Max Kaiser talks about that. Brown's bottom. Meanwhile, I mean, Kaiser doesn't mention why he did it or how he thinks he was leveraged. But again, this is my piecing together of the puzzle. So, cover-ups?
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess even today they have to keep the covered up. At the end of a time ago, people are going to start wondering what else they've covered up and what other things that like this have been done.
Exactly. You know, and we've had the NASA thing about the moon and the pictures, and did we go there? Did we not go there? What are these pictures doing here? Who's Stanley Kubrick? All of those things. So we've been subjected to lots of cover-ups, and then of course, you know, you've got your cover-ups in the States as well, haven't you?
Indeed. You know, I saw the Kubrick documentary that one guy did, Jay, I can't remember.
Jay Widener.
Yeah. He certainly got a good argument, especially with the making of what was that Stephen King movie?
The Shining.
The Shining, because that movie certainly doesn't follow the book very well, and there's all those clues. But my belief is, I think we went to the moon, but not with the technology they showed us. That they couldn't reveal to the world or to the public what they really had, because I don't believe they could. That's my following anyway. I think the moon, we were there, but it was just, we weren't there with that sort of technology, that sort of tin cans.
Yeah. According to one of my guests on the show, William Stillings, is that it didn't have a rocket to take it off the moon. That it was a gravity generator.
Right. Is that William Stillings from the Project Pegasus?
Pegasus guy.
Oh yeah, I know who he is. Okay.
Yeah. I love talking to him. He's really clever, but he's so far out there that you have to really pin him down, and I love that. It's great, you know. Go squeeze that science out of him, because that's what I call black science, the stuff that you know, that operates gravity wave generators and time machines and all this stuff.
He knows some stuff about what's going on at the Coronado Naval Base, which is in San Diego, which where I'm at, and I'm going to talk about that later on, but you know, Coronado is connected to the jump rooms and the maglev train. All those bases are connected.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that that they got these supersonic maglevs. Are they vacuumed? Are they evacuated, or have they?
I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Don't know if they, you know, if you know, air resistance might be a problem if you're going supersonic down a long tube.
Well, in Sean David Morton's book, his book Sands of Time, allegedly he says it's based on a real story. He says when they get on the maglev trains that because of the air pressure or whatever and the speed they're going, it actually puts the occupants asleep, or maybe they put the occupants asleep to. Because of the effect, but that's how, when he's got his characters traveling, they fall asleep on the train until they get to their destination.
All right. Well, that must be quite a good thing, because it would probably take quite a long time. You know, even if you're going fast, it would still, well, I don't know, be a few minutes, wouldn't it?
I think it takes about, he said about 90 minutes to go cross country.
Yeah. Oh, nice little nap.
Right.
Nice afternoon nap. Oh, she's asleep. Hello. No. So the moon.
Oops, I got a lot of background noise. I'm sitting out on the patio, and now there's a lot of people here, and the traffic is. I got the ambient sound.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like it.
But everyone's speaking Spanish though, so can't. Unless you speak Spanish, you don't know what they're saying.
Look at that white man trying to do a radio show here.
Everyone looking at me. I'm here talking into a headset and speaking English, but that's all right. The employees here at Starbucks know what I'm doing, so they're used to it.
So, yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, if either Fall, Billy Shears, whatever, he's either been mind-controlled. Of course, if he had ever admitted it, it would destroy his career. I mean, he's had a pretty nice ride these past decades as Paul McCartney, with all the awards and the lifetime achievements and the knighting and everything else.
Yeah, they keep thanking him, don't they?
Right.
Why do they keep thanking him? Thank you for being a good boy and not saying anything. That's what all the, you know, all these press guys, the guys who want to, you know, run the press there, they're all in service to the crown because they want their knighthood. I think knighthoods give you a bank account. It's got to be that. Stuff like this. You know, if you've been a president, you've got these bank accounts that they put money into so that you can, you know, do their bidding quietly. And then once you've retired, once you've finished, you can dip into the bank account. I think the bank accounts are held in the Vatican.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, if you do a Google for, certainly Blair had it, Blair Vatican account and Bush Vatican account. You see, I saw somewhere that, you know, it was like billions. You know, they got, like, Bush has got $2 billion in his Vatican bank account. That's probably why the guy was found hanging from the bridge. We discovered stuff like that.
Trying to remember who in the music industry has been knighted lately. Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Knighted. What about was Sean Connery knighted?
Sir Sean McConnery. I don't know.
Sean Connery, James Bond. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, he should be Lord Connery. He's brilliant. It's on Revolution Radio. You have him on the jingles. I like that one.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, what other data points can I give? So we've done the eye, we've done the music. Oh, yeah, well, the eye color. I mean, Paul McFall has green eyes, and Paul had dark brown eyes, for a start. He had that, now what is it? Suncor. What's that, the name of that, eye thing where you see three whites? You know, you see a gap between white, the iris and the, lower eyelid.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's, somebody said it was Kung Po, and I can't get that out of my head. It's some sort of Japanese sounding thing. But it's not Kung Po because that's some kind of food. But it's sampaku, sampang, something like that. Ichimi-san. So it's san something because it means three whites. Anyway, it's the sign of... Anyway, but they've both got very different eyes, the shape of the eyes and the way the eyes sit in the head is all quite different. Even the eyebrows... John Paul McCartney had round eyebrows and Paul has a crook, you know, he's got a straight and a crook. And, you know, as he's gotten older, his regular features are kind of coming back a bit. He actually looks now a little bit like Angela Lansbury. And if you go to the totallylookslike.com, you can see that they do look very similar.
Yeah, I heard someone talk about that.
Hmm.
I'm looking at a movie still of the Magical Mystery Tour,
mm-hmm.
and it has Fall. He's in a military uniform, and he's sitting behind a sign that says, I was.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was. And then there's, where is that? Isn't Wilfred Bramble in that photo as well? He does pop up, this Wilfred Bramble character.
Yeah. Huh.
Very odd. Very odd now, indeed.
Now, so I guess Fall... I'm trying to think of the Yellow Submarine. How was Fall introduced in the Yellow Submarine? He was King Kong, wasn't he?
I can't remember that. Here's... All right, the Yellow Submarines, right? Okay, get this. The song Yellow Submarine, a sky of blue and sea of green and a yellow submarine. A Yellow Submarine is a coffin. And it was a song about the cemetery where he was buried. Because it was a seaside town. So there's probably various references inside the, in the song to the actual location in Blackpool. But he's saying, you know, we all live in our yellow submarines. It's like all these people in coffins. They were imagining them underneath the ground like they were under the water.
I'm just trying to remember, let's see, when they go into the mansion, Captain Fred and Ringo, John Lennon is Frankenstein, and he takes some sort of serum, and he turns into John Lennon. But he finds Paul into a room, and it's King Kong. I don't know. You know, I was playing the Yellow Submarine for my daughter, my 2-year-old daughter, last month, and because she likes to play with my, I have like those Yellow Submarine toys, like the submarine and Sergeant Peppers and the Blue Meanies and stuff like that. And it was just kind of weird watching it with her when I remember watching it with my parents when I was a little kid.
Isn't it? It's now, you know, once you know about this thing. Like I was saying right at the beginning, you know, when you know about this and you listen to the music and you hear the lyrics and this stuff pops up all over the lyrics, really all over the lyrics,
right.
That it suddenly becomes a even more macabre and surreal thing than they were in the 60s. Comes very, it's like you start seeing things on lots of different levels, and it's actually quite sad. You can the sadness starts seeping through the kind of brightly coloured, childlike kind of innocent pictures and things like that. What was the album? It might have been Abbey Road. I think it's the inside of Abbey Road where they're all. It looks like they're very sad or somber or crying. Was that Abbey Road?
I don't know.
Or could be the back of Let It Be. I can't remember. But it's like the faces look in anguish, you know, in grief kind of thing. And that's what it is. It's like, and this is what really kind of gets me. There's to me, there is a big pool of psychic grief that is hanging around about this thing. Because humans really know what's going on. And we know on a subconscious, superconscious level that we've been lied to and covered up about this. And that those people who would have committed suicide may indeed have committed suicide, but may indeed have retained some kind of depression ever since then. So I'm just wondering about that energy. What has ever happened? Has that congealed? Has that become a being? Is that going to come back and bite Paul's ass? I don't know.
Yeah, and with the one remaining Beatle, Ringo Starr, carrying that weight from that one song.
Yeah.
I don't know if it hangs heavy on him or what has Ringo Starr been up to lately?
Well, that's the thing. Ringo Starr does not want to speak to anybody. A couple of years ago, I remember him. And again, you could probably find this on YouTube. Ringo says, I'm not going to speak. I'm not going to talk anymore. Hare Krishna, thanks. Stop sending me letters. I'm not going to reply to them. You know, just basically, you know. Go away. in not so uncertain terms. Just go away and leave me alone. And I can understand why. Because he doesn't want to lie. So he doesn't want to speak.
Right. But is he still doing music? Or is he just kind of retired? I know he had a sort of budding acting career in the 80s.
Yeah. His son plays drums.
Right. Yeah, she does. Okay.
And I think also this son has been playing with Julian Lennon.
Right.
And Darren Harrison, well, the Harrison boy. Anyway, basically, they, you know, they've got the next generation going there. By the way, remember the girl with from Hamburg? She lives in Berlin now, and She's a singer-songwriter, it turns out. Purported child of the original Paul McCartney.
And what about the child? What is he? You know anything about?
There's a girl.
Oh, a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's the songwriter. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Right.
So, there's this kind of proliferate, you know, and who knows, you know, how many other children they had in the days.
Certainly with all those groupies.
That's right. That's what it was all about for them. And, you know, it turns out everybody, and what's happening in Britain with this, paedophile scandal and everything, you know, everybody's being hauled up before it. And there's lots of, musicians who are being hauled over the coals about it. Even, you know, cause it was like 13-year-old girls sometimes. And you can do that, you know, they were really dressed up, so they were pretending to be older than they were.
Right.
Honest officer, she said she was 16. You know. Kind of thing. But, yeah, so there's this very dark underbelly, of that. And then there's also the Crowley involvement and, this other thing. Now there's a film. If you want to go deeper into this, if you want to go into the deep, dark, recesses of this, do a YouTube search for The Winged Beetle, 2012. And that's the 90-minute film that shows this information from the outside angle, rather than from an insider's perspective, you know, George Harrison, that it is from the perspective of somebody doing research on it. They come up with all sorts of other stuff, and it does involve Tavistock, and it does involve Crowley, and it talks a lot about the back and stuff like that that they did, and how that was all kind of Crowley influence as well. That it was all that Crowley had this thing about, you know, learn how to speak backwards, to walk backwards, to say things backwards, because you can put across a subliminal message by saying particular words. Or speaking with a particular intent. That was a part of this winged beetle. So yeah. So if you want to go deeply and darkly into this, The Winged Beetle, and you know, a lot of people say, yeah, I never liked that Paul McCartney, or he seemed to change, or there was something about him. I think it's like a lot of people have experienced that little snatch of cosmic.